Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to Unapologetic Live. I'm your host, Amla Abinobi, and Taylor's in the house today.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome. Happy to have you guys. Today, we're going to be talking about something that I just learned about this morning. Taylor sent this my way, a thread talking about these protests that are breaking out in the Netherlands and about what exactly? Farming. And these are massive protests, by the way. This article here out of the Indian Express says some 40,000 farmers have been gathering to protest in the Netherlands because of a government plan to slash emissions of damaging pollutants, talking about nitrogen oxide and ammonia in particular. But we're going to get into this because I had not heard about this. And I was wondering, you know, why is the media not reporting on this? These are massive, large-scale protests. You have farmers getting in their tractors and actually blocking off streets, heading to places of government. There are some crazy videos that we're going to show you of the sort of protests that they are engaging in, all because the government has come out with a plan to slash emissions. So what does this mean? And have you guys heard of this down below? If you're doing chat today, if we could put a poll to ask people if they've heard about these protests happening in the Netherlands, I'm very, very curious. So we're going to get into it. We're going to delve into why this is happening, how people are reacting, and maybe some nefarious characters that have some nefarious intentions that are involved in the plans that are currently taking place in the Netherlands. So for those of you who do not know, I did not know, the Netherlands is one of the top countries for agricultural output, really, in the world. Do you remember what the exact second?
I believe they're the second overall exporter of agriculture.
Second overall exporter of agriculture in the world is the Netherlands. I had no clue that that was the case. But their government, including, you know, all of the members of their parliament, ministers, they're called, have now proposed a plan to cut nitrogen and ammonia emissions by 50% by the year 2030. Now, I get a little smile on my face when I hear the word the year 2030 for a reason that we will get to at the end of this episode. But that's what they want to do. Slash the emissions by 50% by 2030. And now they've ushered out a plan to do so that is heavily impacting the farmers. So let's read this article out of the Indian Express. The farmers' protest around the Netherlands as lawmakers voted Tuesday on proposals to slash emissions of damaging pollutants, a plan that will likely force farmers to cut their livestock herds or stop work altogether. The government says emissions of nitrogen oxide and ammonia, which livestock produce, must be drastically reduced close to nature areas that are part of the network of protected habitats for endangered plants and wildlife stretching across the 27-nation European Union. Now, tractors have gathered outside the parliament as Prime Minister Mark Rutte says farmers have the right to protest but not to break the law. Now, to me, this draws a lot of comparison to the protest that we saw out in Canada with the truckers' convoy. We saw the vaccine mandate get ushered out and the government say, you know, you're not going to be able to do your jobs. You're not going to be able to participate as a citizen in this economy. And the truckers said, absolutely not. We're going to do something about it. They galvanized, got together, and started blocking off the streets in Canada, specifically in Ottawa. And the government said, you know, with their face outright to your face, they said, oh yeah, you have the right to protest, everything is fine, just don't break the law. And then Canada started breaking down people's finances and blocking them from being able to use their credit cards and dismantling the protests that were happening in the streets. I'm curious to see if the same thing happens in the Netherlands, and I imagine it will. So Prime Minister Mark Rutte, which we will get to later on in today's episode, says, you know, farmers have the right to protest, but they don't have the right to break the law. Fair enough. They're going out and some of them are actually vandalizing buildings, spraying manure on buildings outside of you know, the government officials' offices. So we'll show some videos of that as well. So quote from Mark Rutte here. Freedom of speech and the right to demonstrate are a vital part of our democratic society, and I will always defend them. But it is not acceptable to create dangerous situations. It is not acceptable to intimidate officials. We will never accept that. So let's get into what the government is proposing in the Netherlands. The ruling coalition wants to cut emissions of pollutants, predominantly nitrogen oxide and ammonia, by 50% nationwide by 2030. Ministers call the proposal an unavoidable transition that aims to improve air, land, and water quality. They warn that farmers will have to adapt or face the prospect of shuttering their businesses. Quote, the honest message is that not all farmers can continue their business, and those who do will likely have to farm differently, the government said in a statement this month, as it has unveiled the emission reduction targets. Livestock produce ammonia in their urine and feces. The government in the past has called on farmers to use feed for their animals that contains less protein as a way of reducing ammonia emissions. The problem is compounded in the Netherlands, which is known for its intensive farming practices with large numbers of livestock kept on small areas of land. It's not only farmers being targeted. So I actually went and read into this and what their plan was with all of the nitrogen emissions, the ammonia emissions, the carbon footprint, all that other stuff. Apparently, they legislatively cut their speed limit on their roads, which was an interesting take, one that I had never seen before, from 130 kilometers, and for those of you in the U.S., that's 80 miles per hour, to 100 kilometers during the day, and they set this as a nationwide law. So apparently the government is saying, you know, we've been forced to take actions regarding this, and here's what's going to happen. Now, as you might imagine, the farmers in the Netherlands are not happy about this at all. And then we're going to show some videos of the activities that they have been up to in the area. First, here's this picture. Wow. Look at all these tractors gathered. And like we said in that article before, 40,000 farmers coming together and saying, absolutely not. You don't get to take our livelihoods away from us in the name of lowering emissions. Let's come to the table. Let's figure out how to solve this so that I can get back to doing my work and work that is utterly necessary, considering they're the second largest exporter of agricultural goods in the world. I can't imagine what this is going to do to their economy, which makes me question, you know, how things are going to work moving forward. If you have this high output when it comes to agricultural production, how is it that you're going to cut it to where lots of these farmers are either A, running out of business, B, losing a large portion of the business that they already have, or C, keeping their business and having to change all of their means of production. How does that work for your economy when you're the second largest exporter? What's going to happen to the land that these farmers stop using in the name of these regulations, of regulating these emissions? Who's going to buy that from them? Because I imagine if their businesses are out, they're done, finito, they're going to have to sell that land to somebody. And we'll talk about that as well. I wonder who's going to be buying up that land. Now, it's interesting that they're saying this, you know, all in the name of emissions. And Taylor brought this up because he's really pro-nuclear. Like, Taylor goes down the rabbit hole of energy. Do you want to explain, like, how you got into all this?
Well, I suggest if you haven't seen it, go check out Michael Schellenberger did a TED Talk on nuclear energy a few years ago now. It has like 4 million views on YouTube. Just look, Google it and you'll find it. We're trying to get him on the show week, which would be awesome. But, yeah, essentially, for all that you hear about climate activism and all the outcry and how we need urgent action, just ask them if they support nuclear. And there's no rational reason not to. And it's you're either just disingenuous in your motives or just ignorant and uninformed. But that's my litmus test is like France has some of the lowest carbon emissions in Europe because they have a lot of nuclear power plants, and that's a large portion of their energy comes from that. The Netherlands, for all these, they're reducing their speed limit and banning their farmers from being able to do their jobs. And I just read an article today that they're even capping the number of flights out of the Amsterdam Schiphol Airport. That's an unprecedented move. Yep. Yeah, there it is. They're doing all of these dramatic things in the name of climate change when the vast majority of their oil, I think, or of their energy comes from petroleum.
Yeah.
Literally like 5% or less comes from biofuels and green sources. So you could, if you really cared, you would switch to nuclear, but they don't.
Yeah, but instead they're willing to just like harm the lives of the people, their livelihoods, which is, you know, one of the largest occupations in the Netherlands is being a farmer. And here's what they're doing. They've ushered out this plan. And yeah, what Taylor was talking about with the flights, the Netherlands is actually one of the first countries that's going to do this. It'll happen in 2023. Apparently, they're cutting down the number of flights that can happen by 12% from their pre-pandemic levels.
Which, what do you think that's going to do to flight prices? It's going to harm people, everyday people who are just trying to get from A to B and live their lives. It's like all this crazy economic damage when you could just cut the emissions that you need to cut in other areas that you're willfully ignoring.
Yeah.
It's like, why? It's so strange.
Why? Okay. Yeah. So we're asking ourselves the question, why? And I am by no means an expert on energy, on nuclear, on nitrogen oxide and ammonia and these emissions and their direct effect on climate, although I have done lots of reading on this today in particular. But it seems like they will do anything like to harm their citizens before they will actually get to a better, more efficient solution to these problems. Now, as far as nuclear plants, the Netherlands does have one nuclear plant, apparently, which creates enough energy to support over 1 million homes. However, the Netherlands is highly populated. I believe their population was about, it's nearly 17 and a half million individuals living in the country. So they are in nuclear in one way, but you could expand that and take care of a lot of the emissions problems that you're having in your country, which is a heavy populated country with a good economy. I don't understand why this is not one of the main forms of action that they're taking. Instead, we are going after the farmers. Now, as far as nitrogen and ammonia, I did look into this and what effect they have on the environment. They're very concerned about water quality, air quality, and just their ecosystems as far as their plant life and things like that. Nitrogen and ammonia can directly affect those. And what they seem to be having a problem with in a lot of their protected nature areas is that nitrogen-heavy plants are overtaking those that don't make use of the nitrogen. So that's why they're going after farmers, their fertilizers, and their livestock, because of the livestock feces and urine is ammonia heavy. I wanted to find, there's something that when I was reading about this in the UK, they made like masks for cows that changes their emissions. Did you ever read about that?
I don't know about masks, but they had the fart bags or whatever that caught their
methane.
Yes, it's like
a fart mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Netherlands should just order a bunch of those and put them on the livestock.
Problem solved.
That'll take care of the problem. I'm no scientist here, and I understand that there is methane released and nitrogen oxide and ammonia in the urine, in the feces, all these different things. But it just blows my mind at how much of a problem this has become because of that. Anyways, let's continue here. So here's a video of what some of the farmers are doing. I've turned the sound off on it because there's just music playing over it. But this is what they're doing. This is apparently outside a government building where they have piled up manure. They're throwing hay bales into the roads, apparently. Tractors to the tune of thousands are driving through the Netherlands as a form of protest. And you have just tens of thousands of people coming out and speaking out against this. And apparently, the Dutch population is for the most part in support of the protesters themselves and are getting behind their message. I imagine economically, it's not going to benefit them to cut what these farmers are doing. Now, are we for protests that involve vandalism, breaking the law, blocking roads, things like that? It's so tough. It's so tough for me to come out with, you know, a conclusive opinion on it. You know, we saw the same thing with the Canadian trucker convoy. They were blocking roads. I don't think they were very much engaged in vandalism other than, you know, putting a cardboard sign on their fox statue in Canada. So there wasn't much to that degree, but I don't know. I don't know that I can say, you know, I don't know. Taylor, do you have any strong opinions on whether or not that's okay when the government, you know, takes this sort of overstep when it comes to your livelihood?
No, it's not okay for the government to overstep its bounds. And
sure.
Yeah.
But is there a form of protest? Is that okay? Oh. It breaking laws in response to your government overstep? It's a tough.
I was listening to a podcast about the American Revolution this past weekend, and they talk about this a little bit, like. The Declaration of Independence, the first words on it are when in the course of human events, like the tyranny becomes too unjust and it violates your natural rights, then it is the moral thing to do is to violate it. But that's a different question from whether it's a legitimate way to protest to just create I think it's a fine line. I think there are times in which you can, and I don't know. I think you have to look at the specific situation and look at the context around it. I don't know if spraying poop on the parliament, you know, building or whatever is like
blocking it with manure
the most effective thing that's going to look favorably upon your cause and get more people behind it.
Right.
It's kind of funny, which is great. But anyway, in general, there's like Martin Luther King, civil disobedience is a thing. Like they did the illegal thing and did the sit-ins and things like that. And those are legitimate.
Right.
But I think it's highly contextual.
Yeah, it is. It just depends on the cause. I watched a video on Twitter today of these climate activists sitting and blocking a road with their little signs about climate, calling for this administration to declare a climate emergency. And a guy who's a parolee trying to drive to work, and if he does not make it to work, faces the possibility of going back to jail, is like begging these people to get up out of the road and let him go so that he doesn't go to prison. Which, you know, in that case, I look at that and I'm like, what are you doing? At least open the road up for this man to be able to go to work so he doesn't go to jail. And they just sit there staring at him. They sit there staring at him. He's begging them to move, and he ends up getting arrested, which I imagine is not going to look good with your parole officer or you know, with whether or not you're going to go to jail. So it's back and forth. I guess for me, it just like depends on the cause. But if I say it's okay for one cause, then who am I to, you know, delegitimize what other people are trying to do in the name of theirs? It's a fine line, most certainly. But let's look at what the responses are to some of these protests. This is out of the Washington Post. Dutch police shoot at tractor during night of farm protests. Now, it's hard to find people who are reporting on this, talking about who's there, but there are videos out on Twitter where you can hear the gunshots from Dutch police towards these tractors. Now, they've said that the shots were warning shots. Sure, I guess. I guess if that's what you tell me it is, then that's what it is. But you have unarmed farmers who are out here protesting in their tractors, and you shoot at them? That's what the police officers do? But no, police brutality is only a problem for us Americans, right, guys? It's purely an American, a distinctly American problem to have police officers overstep their bounds and maybe utilize forms of force that they are not meant to use. Now, they said, you know, these were warning shots. We weren't shooting towards any tractors. But apparently there was an underage boy in one of these tractors who says that the shots came very near to his person. So it's hard to find any sort of definitive reporting on what has happened or how it's happened. But this is what we have so far. I'm curious to know what your guys' thoughts on this. Have you guys heard anything different than what I'm telling you now? And we're going to get into some of the background on this and why the Netherlands in particular seems to be a hotbed for these changes, lowering the speed limit, lowering the amount of flights that people can take, cutting off farmers' ability to do their jobs in the name of lowering emissions. Now, I want to go and find this tweet that I saw earlier, which is really interesting. So the Netherlands is famous for making these sort of changes and being very worried about climate change and being very invested in what we call climate change hysteria. And one of the women who proposed this bill, and I will find her on the parliament site. Let's see. Ministers. Oh, what's her name? Let me scroll here. Okay. This lady, Christian van der Walziglink. She's the Minister for Nature and Nitrogen Policy, and she's the one who set forth this bill, who pushed for it. And according to this tweet here, the Dutch minister who pushed the nitrogen law that grants the government the power to expropriate our farmers' land has a brother-in-law, this is, needs correction, a brother who owns online supermarket Picnic. And guess who invested $600 million into that company? Bill Gates. And this is what corruption looked like. So we can talk about whether or not that counts as a direct link, because to me, that is a very blurry link. And I don't think we can use that as a direct sign of corruption. But it is quite interesting to have one of the ministers of the Dutch parliament have a brother-in-law who's now has $600 million from Mr. Bill Gates. And we all know that Bill Gates here is famous for having the most farmland here in the United States, more than anyone else, and also a major advocate for the development of fake meat rather than using real livestock that is, you know, farm raised here in the United States and across the world. So in 2030, when we're down by 50% emissions, we also own nothing and we're eating bugs, Bill Gates right here is going to be the one who owns most of the farmland. So while I think it is a fuzzy connection to this particular minister, it's really interesting. $600 million is a lot of money from a man who owns all the farmland while all of this is happening in the background, and it is the minister who pushed this specific bill. So I'm just putting that out there. I mean, view that as you will, but it seems like everywhere we turn, where something weird is happening, or people's rights are being stepped on, or their livelihoods are being stepped on, particularly in the name of climate change or a more sustainable future, this man is lurking somewhere in the shadows.
Sir William.
Yeah, with some sort of distinct connection to whatever it is that we're talking about. And we're going to get further into that connection now. So when I look at people who are distinctly worried and attached to climate hysteria, they're worried about the emissions, they're taking these drastic measures in order to decrease emissions, my immediate thought is World Economic Forum. For those of you who are unaware, the World Economic Forum is basically a group of thought leaders, businessmen, corporations, politicians, world leaders who gather together in Davos once a year, I believe, to come and talk about creating a more sustainable future. If you go and look up the World Economic Forum on the internet, you'll find their website. We've done an entire video on the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset in particular, which is something that many of them advocate for, which is essentially a resetting of the world economy, the global economy, to be part of this globalist network where they say by 2030, you will own nothing and be happy. And they are very much involved with the whole climate change narrative, telling people that we need to reduce emissions, talking about things like a personal carbon footprint that tracks how much carbon you use on a day-to-day basis. And what they advocate for is just the loss of all property, of all private property. And, you know, it's going to be our loss, the citizens' loss of whatever countries are involved in this. It won't be their loss. It won't be the leaders' loss because they will get to reap all the benefits of taking your resources, of taking your property. And they don't worry. They'll build a sustainable future for you in the face of all these crises that we are currently going through. Now, the World Economic Forum is headed by a man, none other than Klaus Schwab. By 2030, you will own nothing and be so happy about it. And he looks like a little villain with his little bald head, his German accent. And he wrote a book titled The Great Reset, where he lays all this out and talks about it. Now, why did I just go on this whole spiel about the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset? Because the Netherlands is distinctly connected to the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset, although they would like you to believe otherwise. I want to show you what is a tremendous video that encapsulates exactly what I've just said. This is actually in Parliament as a Dutch member stands and talks to a one Mark Rutte, the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, and asks him about his connection to Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, and the Great Reset. Now, is he met with honesty when he asks this question? No. He is met with a lie, and it's a lie that we will go through and talk about and show you the evidence for the connection that we are talking about now. So let's watch this video. Obviously, this is in a different language. I'm going to say exactly what is being said. One of these globalists is Mr. Klaus Schwab, founder and chairman of the World Economic Forum. He wrote a book with the catchy title, COVID-19, The Great Reset. My question to the Prime Minister is, how does he judge the content of this book? So, that's what the member is asking. He's asking the Prime Minister, well, what do you think about Klaus Schwab's book, The Great Reset? And here's what the Prime Minister has to say. I do not know this book, but I would like to advise Mr. whatever his name is, I can't pronounce that, not to look too much into these conspiracy theories. Very important thing that he said. Do not look too much into these conspiracy theories, is what the Prime Minister told him. Okay, let's keep watching. I have also watched these fascinating YouTube videos that explain how 9/11 didn't happen, or that it happened in a different way. They are nicely put together, but most of the time, it is just what it is, a conspiracy theory. Now the Member of Parliament responds to the Prime Minister by saying, "It surprises me that the first question I ask Mr. Root, since I have been sworn in as a Member of Parliament..." Mr. Root congratulates him on being sworn in, and he says thank you very much. "It surprises me that my question was answered with a lie. I have a letter dated November 26, 2020, where Mr. Root, from Mr. Root to Mr. Klaus Schwab, in which he thanks Mr. Schwab for sending him his book, and he calls it a hopeful analysis for a better future." That's a very specific thing to say about a book that somebody sends you about resetting the global economy to a communist future. That's a really distinct thing to say. A hopeful analysis for a better future. Let's keep watching. Could Mr. Root dig into his memory? It's less than half a year ago. I do not know how long... Go back to get exactly what he said. "I do not know how long your memories remain active, but you can probably dig this up somewhere. So please answer my first question again, but this time with honesty." And the Prime Minister then responds, "Well, the honest answer is that this is a letter out of politeness, because unfortunately you cannot read all books that get sent in. But you do not want to send a friendly thank you letter to those who send you a book. So, Mr. Root..." So, Mr. Root is saying, here's what the Parliament member responds, "that he didn't lie to me, but he lied to Mr. Klaus Schwab. I have another question. Mr. Schwab pleads in his book for resetting our world. He wants to replace our parliamentary democracy with a global technocracy. He pleads for the end of private property. And apparently Mr. Root is not even aware that he called this a hopeful analysis for a better future. How is it possible that Mr. Root values a book that has a neo-communist message, while he did not even read this book?" Okay, so there's the end of the video there. So you got a direct confrontation from a member of parliament who says, okay, you read the book, clearly. You wrote him a letter saying this is a hopeful analysis for a better future. And the Prime Minister says this is a conspiracy theory. And he likens it to conspiracy theories about 9/11. Now, this blows my mind because this was in, I want to say, this was in 2021, the beginning of 2021, that this video came out, that this guy confronted the Prime Minister about this. And he says, these are conspiracy theories. I've never read Klaus Schwab's book. Don't know what the Great Reset is other than the fact that it's a conspiracy theory. But let's look. Here's a video from 2016, so years prior. And what would you know?
We see there's today Mr. Mark that in the first 3 weeks of this year, there were 35,000 people crossing the sea from Turkey into Greece. Last year.
Okay, so you just saw that. You watched him. It's not a deep fake. You're listening to him talk right now. And what's in the background? What does that say? The World Economic Forum, 2016. Mr. Root here was present at the World Economic Forum to speak. And then you go and you say, okay, maybe he just didn't remember that he was at the World Economic Forum. Maybe he has no idea about Klaus Schwab's plan for the Great Reset. And then you go to the World Economic Forum website, and there he is again. Mr. Mark Rutte, Prime Minister of the Netherlands, Office of the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, on the World Economic Forum website, which touts the Great Reset and how we need to build a more sustainable future, how we need to lower our carbon emissions and do so through surveilling people and creating personal carbon allowances for all individuals who are part of this globalist economy. But it's just a conspiracy theory, right? In fact, I never read the book. We send those letters as courtesy. I often send people letters, people that are advocating for a communo-fascist future for our economy. I often send them letters about how it is a hopeful analysis for a better future. Do you do the same, Taylor?
Tell you, when Mao Zedong sent me that little red book, I said it's such a hopeful analysis of the future of China.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he called it neo-communism. That's what this stuff is. It's the next iteration of communism. And that's you will own nothing and be happy. What does that sound like to you? A better future?
Right. a hopeful comrade. Analysis for a better future, comrade. And that is exactly what they say. I urge all of you to go and look through the World Economic Forum website and check out exactly what it is that they say about what your future looks like. I'm talking everything that you have being government owned, down to the pots and pans that you use in your kitchen. Those are government issued pots and pans and utensils. That's how far they go when they talk about their plan for your future. Now, obviously, that's far, far out from where we are now. And it may be that we are capable of fending them off and we never see this future happen. But to see all this stuff happening in the Netherlands in the name of climate change and reducing emissions, and to see a minister on Dutch Parliament whose brother-in-law just got $600 million from Bill Gates, who owns all the farmland in the United States, and also purely advocates for the World Economic Forum. And then to have Mr. Prime Minister here lie about reading the Great Reset book, lie about calling it really calling it a hopeful analysis for a better future, label the Great Reset as a conspiracy theory when he has actively attended the World Economic Forum and spoke at it here in 2016, years before this letter was brought to attention, and is just freshly on their website as a contributor on their agenda. I mean, at this point, can you even call it a conspiracy theory? Can you even call it that when you have the horse? You know, you have it from the horse's mouth, except the horse still wants to lie to you, even though all the evidence is right there, ladies and gentlemen. And I can nearly guarantee, Mr. Mark Root, how did he get to that World Economic Forum? How did he get there? How did he get to Switzerland? Was it in, you know, did he fly commercial to get there? Because we've heard from the climate summit and all of these world leaders flying in on their private jets, so many private jets that they actually had traffic on the taxiway and couldn't get all of them in a timely manner for how many private jets were flying into the climate summit talking about your carbon emissions. Do you think that's how he flew to Switzerland? Along with all of his other fellow citizens on a commercial flight in economy? I think not. Yes. I think not.
You can't farm your field or drive more than 60 miles an hour, but right. Let me go get on my private jet to go fight climate change.
Right, right. And it just begs the question. You know, they know they're harming the economy. Second largest exporter of agricultural goods. And this doesn't benefit your citizens. And it seemingly doesn't benefit you, other than to cause turmoil in a way that people are begging you for something more sustainable. And who promises you a sustainable future? The World Economic Forum promises you a sustainable future.
Can I get your reaction to this comment? I think this is a sentiment shared by a lot of people who don't think this is a big deal and that mm-hmm. we need to be fighting climate change. This is Fatima on mm-hmm. Facebook said, I don't get it. This is an idea to save the environment and everyone's freaking out because the economy shouldn't be more important than fixing a problem, which is all this pollution, and the science is on our side, basically.
Yeah, so we're going to have Michael Schellenberger on the show hopefully next week. I've reached out to him today to set up a time and he used to be one of these climate change activist hysteria, really involved on the progressive end of the climate change movement, and started actually traveling around, seeing what people are doing, and got introduced to nuclear energy. And like Taylor said, there's great TED Talks that he's done on the subject matter of going through this journey, of finding out this stuff, and realizing that so many countries, not just the United States, are ignoring what we could be doing to actually lower emissions, and instead harming people and regulating what are average everyday citizens who are trying to make a livelihood for themselves, their families, their communities, instead of doing what could actually be done to take care of this problem. I'm by no means coming up and denying that climate change is a thing, or that we should be looking at our emissions and seeing what we could do there. This is not the way that you do it. This is simply not the way that you do it. And there are so many other things that we could prescribe for this problem instead of creating this sort of turmoil and hurting the livelihoods of your average citizens. And nobody's doing it. In fact, nobody's even talking about it. When you go and look at this, if you search this Dutch farmer protest, very few people are talking about it. And this has been happening for over a week now. I think the article that I just read out of the Indian Express was from July 3rd, and it talks about the previous week. So we're a week in at this point, and I'm just now hearing about it, which is unbelievable to me. And goes to show that maybe we have some other problems ahead. So I'm not arguing that there is not a problem. I'm arguing that we're solving it in a very, very wrong way. So that's my answer to that particular comment. And to see these characters who continuously pop up in these areas of turmoil, while also advocating that they're going to build a sustainable future for you where they get all of your resources and all of your private property. Questionable as well.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's a false dichotomy to say that you have to choose between an economy and the environment. And right. There are solutions. Show me the thing that I'm opposing, mm-hmm. Or show me the policy that solves climate change and in a practical way, that we're opposing, and that they never talk about these practical solutions. It's the solution that is being offered right now by that we're calling out is global communism.
Yes.
And not being able to drive your car or farm your farmland, or you giving up all of your freedom and agency as an individual, because that's what it takes to solve the climate crisis. Well, let's mm-hmm. explain to me the nature of the crisis. I need you to do a little bit better job of connecting the dots. Like, how much money did you pay at the pump the last time you filled your gas right now? Because we just sent 5 million barrels of oil from our strategic reserves that we released supposedly to decrease gas prices. We just sent those to Europe. And meanwhile, the U.S. There's a petroleum association that has sent a letter to the government saying, hey, here's all the ways that you are hindering us from being able to reduce the price of oil. So while you're telling us that it's because we're greedy capitalists, it's actually because you're not approving new leases, you're cutting down on natural gas and all this stuff. That's what's creating this crisis that is hurting everyday Americans. And by the way, this is a great point that Schellenberger makes, is that, poorer countries burn dirtier fuels like wood that releases a lot of toxicity and greenhouse gases into the environment. And as countries advance, they go to cleaner sources. And the end of that advancement is nuclear, mm-hmm. because that is the cleanest, most efficient source with the least amount of waste and the least amount of damage to the environment. And we can go down the rabbit hole of wind and solar if you want. We have videos about that at PragerU.
Texas freeze, baby.
Yeah. But so our progressive solution to a better, cleaner future is omitting nuclear from the picture, which is utterly insane. So we're not saying that we want the cleaner future. We're advocating for that. We want to be the sensible solutions. And these people are taking us backwards and making us devastating our economies, devastating our livelihoods, devastating our freedoms, all for this problem that they're not even really defining or giving sensible solutions or a path to a realistic path to. It's just, I'll buy up all the farmland that you can't afford to run anymore because we're overregulating it to death. The gas is too expensive. Well, you should buy an electric car anyway. It's not realistic, but the net effect is you're getting poorer. You're owning less private property. You can't buy a home. You can't drive a car. And that's what they want you. They want you dependent. They want you poor. So don't give up your freedom in the name of some global crisis or anything like that. We had a great trial run of the pandemic, and I am canceling my subscription.
That was great. I love that. Yeah, you have to wonder. And it's so interesting to me because the people who are most talkative about climate problems are the ones who are completely unwilling to sacrifice any of their personal freedoms for any of this stuff. Yep. You have a climate summit that happens once a year where everybody flies in on their private jets, and they're telling you, the Netherlands is telling you that by 2030, they're going to cut how many people are able to travel on flights. And this will be the first country of probably many that engage in this sort of legislation. How is that okay? How is that okay that the leaders that be, the power that be, gets to do whatever they want with their lives, emit as much carbon as they want into the world, but they're telling you what you can and cannot do, and then trying to sell you on a crisis and say that you're going to do something that's going to sustain the future? You have to be the sacrificial lamb in every single case and every single problem that they create for you. Clearly, either A, they just want to sit at the top and be able to do whatever they want to do, and this is a real crisis, but they're just not willing to give that up, or B, maybe they're lying to you. Because if I truly believe that the world was going to end because of carbon emissions and nitrogen oxide and ammonia, I don't think I'd fly my private jet over to this conference on climate change. I think I maybe would try to reduce my own carbon emissions for the sake of the greater good, as they always say, but none of them engage in that. So why is that? These are questions that we really should be asking ourselves. And there are so many people, especially the leaders of this world, who are so willing to let you sacrifice anything and everything for the greater good or for whatever their ends are, but they do nothing at all.
It reminds me of that scene in Shrek when Lord Farquaad says, "Some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice that I'm willing to make." And that's exactly what's happening is these our leaders, our global leaders, are deciding what you will sacrifice. You don't have a say in it. You don't get to... this is not something that you voted for right. or have any representation in. It's, we have this crisis, and guess what? Because we have to save Ukraine, you get to pay $7 a gallon for gas in California. Because right. We can't possibly afford to allow us to produce more oil, guess what? You're going to have to pay $7 a gallon for gas. It's like they decide that you get to pay a price and mm-hmm. you don't get a say in it. And you're supposed to just go along with it because utopia, we have to get to utopia. Right. It's this transition. It's necessary thing. I think one of the first articles you read said, this is a necessary part of the transition.
Mm-hmm. Necessary. It's all necessary towards your sustainable future. Oh, we promise everything is going to be good for you. It's so crazy to me.
Do you still it's have that amazing. Nicole Kidman video, by the way?
Oh, yeah, the McBug video?
I think we lost your screen, but...
Oh, okay, let me go and search it for you guys. I want to see it now. This is whatever, you know? I saw this video on Twitter today. Vanity Fair just put it out, and it's Nicole Kidman literally eating bugs and talking about how 2 billion people in the world eat bugs, and this is where we're at and all this stuff, and look at me. Okay, totally found it. Let me pause it and pull it up for you guys. Just let me know what you guys think of this, because...
I'm Nicole Kidman, and I am going to eat a 4-course meal of bugs. I am here to reveal my hidden talent, eating micro-livestock cornworms. They're still alive. Mmm. Extraordinary. Mmm. Very moist. Chewy. Can't quite describe the flavor, but need a little water.
Oh, but it's so good, though. Need a little water, but it's so delicious, right? Right, Nicole?
Let's try the second course, shall we? Just a little side note. 2 billion people in the world eat bugs.
Do you want to, like, add anything else on why 2 billion people in the world eat bugs? Is it because they had, you know, a filet mignon in front of them and they went, oh, no, I'll take my mealworms instead. I'd prefer that. That's why 2 billion people in the world eat bugs. No, it's not. It's not, Nicole. So don't, it's like they're trying to sell you on this. And it's very similar to, like, you know, some of these articles that are coming out about climate change saying that the future of protein is bugs, or Bill Gates himself saying the future of protein is synthetic meat. They're trying to sell you on something that we know is BS. We know that it's BS. Oh, but 2 billion people in the world eat bugs. Okay. Not because they want to, Nicole. Anyways.
And I'm one of them, because here we go. Have some mealworms. I'm telling
you. Oh, she looks like that's so delicious to her.
She said, I'm one of them. 2 billion people eat bugs, and I'm one of them. So I'm just like the people in third world countries who eat bugs. Look at me in this Vanity Fair set.
I can't.
Eating on fine china.
Let's, like, look at this set for a second. Let me see if I can pull. Oh, there we go. Oh, my gosh. This nice Victorian-style lamps with these beautiful curtains. This old vintage little seating place with the little bench thing for her to eat off of. Beautiful little flowers in this crystal, probably glass, and this old school dining set for her to unveil her mealworms. Like, how out of touch do you have to be as an individual to make a video like this?
I was just in France for a friend's wedding, and we went to the Louvre and walked through the... This reminds me of walking through, like, their big salons. Like, you get to walk through the quarters that, like, Napoleon III lived in or whatever, and his family, and you see, like, Marie Antoinette's furniture. But all this, like, they basically had tons of money, because they were just profiting off the entire country. They were the elites and just had invented new ways to show it off and built these like crazy palaces and stuff. And this just reminds me of like this elitist, this is essentially elitist propaganda. It's like, look at you, commoners. See, it's good that you'll be eating bugs after we squeeze you out of being able to drive and squeeze you out of being able to own your own home. You can eat bugs just like the 2 billion people in the world, like just like me.
Yep.
And it's a fine dining experience. And someone in the chat said she's going to be eating a filet mignon right after this.
Exactly.
After brushing her teeth.
In her little designer dress that she's wearing. It's so unbelievable to me. Yeah. Sign me up for my McBug Soylent future because I watched Nicole Kidman in a Vanity Fair video eat them. It's like, how stupid do they think you are? They really think you're stupid. With every single political issue, social issue whatsoever, they go out and trounce around their little drove of Hollywood actors to tell you what it is that you should say, tell you what's acceptable, tell you what the elite believes on the certain issues. But I saw Nicole Kidman eating mealworms on Vanity Fair. Oh, this must be an elite lifestyle. She even said 2 billion other people eat them as well. Okay, in the frickin' Congo. Two billion people eat them. It's not. Oh my gosh! I just can't.
This is her best performance since Moulin Rouge, though. Just gotta give it to her.
And I like Nicole Kidman. She's a good actress. I love watching Nicole Kidman. I don't like watching her eat bugs. Okay, whatever. Anyways, I don't even know what else to say. But I'm glad that I subjected you guys to that with me because I had to be subjected to it earlier. So now you have joined in. But let me know, what do you guys think about what's happening in the Netherlands right now? Am I on the right track here? Do you think I'm on the wrong track? Do you truly believe that climate change is the massive issue that they're making it out to be and that we do need to be cutting out what farmers can do and reducing the amount of livestock they can have and cutting out their land, essentially? Again, I wonder who's going to buy that land. Who's going to buy the land from the farmers who can no longer use it or do not have the profit to keep it up anymore? Just a question. Just a thought. Is the government going to buy it? Is Bill Gates going to buy it?
Gil Bates.
Gil Bates. Is Gil Bates going to buy it? While he tells you about your fake meat future, your Soylent cricket, fried cricket future, you let me know what you guys think. And other than that, I really have nothing else to say. Check out the World Economic Forum website. Give that a jolly good read, even though it's just a conspiracy theory and we've never read the Great Reset book and we certainly didn't call it a hopeful analysis for a better future or speak at the World Economic Forum in 2016 or become a contributor on the agenda of the World Economic Forum that you can find on their website. We certainly didn't do any of those things. These are conspiracy theories made up by far-right extremists. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please subscribe. Click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Leave the comment down below. Did you guys know about this? What are your thoughts on this? Am I on the wrong track or the right track? Do you disagree with me on anything? Do you agree with me on anything? Do you wish I had said something that I did not say? Drop that in the comments down below. And if you'd like to listen to this podcast, go to Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review because the left leaves us 1-star reviews. So sad. They want the McBug Soylent future. That we are not willing to engage in. I will see you guys tomorrow, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Peace.